look, it's a win situation for you and it's a win situation for us. We can come in, give you the price that you need to move forward from this deal. We're still gonna, you know, we're still gonna come in and get a good deal for ourselves. We're saving you guys, but we can still get into a really good market and a really good deal when we look at all those factors together.
You're listening to Ice Cream with Investors, a podcast that is dedicated to teaching you how to better invest your money so that you can live a more intentional life. I'm your host, Matt Foer, and it is my goal to teach and empower you to remove the roadblocks to your financial success.
All right, Donato, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You got it. Well, we like to start with the difficult questions here. What's your favorite ice cream?
Vanilla bean. Not vanilla, straight up vanilla bean. Like vanilla bean, Talenti, gelato, all day long. Oh, it's amazing.
I'm glad you clarified with the bean, because I think vanilla is very basic. Unless you zhuzh it up a little bit, it's not my favorite. But like good hardcore vanilla bean, I can get down with that.
Absolutely. It's like Talenti brand vanilla bean gelato. It's just you put a little bit of that, maybe on a little cobbler, maybe on just by itself. You know, that's a good day right there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm actually coming to your neck of the woods in March down in St. Louis. When I'm there, can I go get the best ice cream?
Oh, I was just there today. It's a place called the Gelaterium. It's on Grand Boulevard or gelato. It's a gelato spot plus a coffee shop plus a sandwich shop. Nice little area. They do all the different types of gelato. Highly, highly recommend.
Perfect. I'm going to check it out. Take your word for it.
Got you, man.
Well, tell our listeners, what's the scoop? What do you do today?
So what I do today primarily is I'm the CEO of Bright Investor, which is the number one tool for real estate market research. And I do commercial multifamily syndication.
Perfect. I cannot wait to talk about Bright Investor and some of the tools that you got there. I was checking it out before the show. But before we get there, take us back. Where did your real estate journey actually begin?
It started with failure. We'll start there. My real estate journey began back in college. I'd won the scholarship that paid me to go to school. And so I was saving up this money. And my parents said, hey, you have some cash saved up. You got to start investing it. So I put it in the stock market. And I put money in January 2020. 2 months later, I lost half of it to COVID. And I thought, this sucks. So I asked the question that every entrepreneur has, you know, is there a better way? Which led me to real estate. So I started looking at ways to get into real estate and pretty quickly found wholesaling. And I remember the first reaction I had to that was, I don't want to do that. And then I started looking more into it. I'm like, okay, well, you know, this seems like the tried and true method to start. So why don't we just, you know, take massive action and just see what happens. So I spent the entirety of my senior year of college running a wholesaling company, doing mailers, dialing, driving for dollars. I also got a job as a property management coordinator to learn how to like walk through buildings and how to deal with tenants. And then I also started volunteering for agents when they had a client who would buy a house. The agent would call me and get me and my college buddies to come move their stuff in as opposed to hiring professional movers because we were cheaper. And so I get to help make connections with the agents who gave me MLS access. And then, you know, they'd have a client who would say to live in California and they were buying an investment property in Boise and they needed someone to help furnish it because they were going to do an Airbnb. Well, the agent would call me and I'd start driving around town to all the different furniture stores and have a little iPad or iPhone taped to my chest while the investor's on the phone saying, do you like that couch? Do you like that couch? And I would furnish houses. So just poured myself into the industry to learn where I could. And after about maybe 9 or 10 months of wholesaling, got some things under contract. They fell apart while during the contract process. I was not prepared. I didn't know what I was doing. Decided that, what do I really want to do in real estate? Is it to do one transaction, get some cash, pay up a large portion of it in taxes, and then have to go find another deal? Or is it do I want to do something once and get paid multiple times for it? And that's where ownership came into play for me. So I thought, I don't want to do wholesaling anymore. I want to buy property and own it and get the repetitive benefits through depreciation, cash flow, and appreciation so I can actually have something I can live in and continue to benefit from for multiple years.
So you're 24, right?
That is correct.
At a very young age, you already saw what everybody sees in this industry. It's like the typical journey is you start wholesaling. Then you were like, hey, I need to make more money. Why don't I flip a few of these? Oh, hey, maybe I should hold some of these. And then ultimately they get into larger commercial real estate. I love how you just kind of jumped the entire process.
Thank you so much. And actually, I'm starting a course on this right now. I'm going to be teaching other people how to do this exact thing, because you do not have to waste 15 years in the middle to get to where you want to go. And so it's, you know, people bird dog, they wholesale, they do a flip, long-term rental, maybe midterm, maybe short-term, maybe larger multifamily to self-storage or commercial. And when you think about it, which is, I want consistent mailbox, 1 year passive cash flow, and I want to have something that appreciates over time. Well, if I can get to the bigger deals faster without having to wait the 15 years of experience in between, you can get to where you want to go a lot quicker, which is why now I'm about to close another $20 million syndication in Texas, bringing me up to nearly $40 million, because I thought, why don't we just stop doing the small stuff and go find a team that knows how to do the big stuff, and I'll just help them out until they bring me on. And that's what I'm doing now. You just skip it.
Amazing.
Because you don't have to do it.
Well, let me, I'm actually interested on that piece, but before we get there, the wholesaling piece, you mentioned that you had some stuff under contract and it ultimately fell through. So first question is, did you end up wholesaling any properties before you kind of moved out of that business?
I did. It was the one transaction that took me 30 minutes of work. That's the only one that actually made me any money. And that was, I knew there was a seller in St. Louis who was trying to sell their property on market, wasn't working out. So the seller had an agent. The agent knew me. I knew another wholesaler in St. Louis. That wholesaler knew another wholesaler, and that wholesaler ended up flipping it. So what I did for 30 minutes of work is I connected the agent and I connected the other wholesaler and got a $2,000 remote wholesaling assignment fee when that property closed, going through six different people. You only made
$2,000?
I only made $2,000 for 30 minutes of work. Now, the $20,000 that I spent over 10 months doing direct dialing and mailers and driving, all that didn't net me anything. It was just knowing the right person that actually made me any money in the wholesaling industry.
So everybody that comes on the show that's involved in wholesaling, oh, it's so easy, it's systematizable, lead flow is great, all these sorts of things. Yeah, we have to adjust our strategies, but it's easy. And you're the first person I've had come on that's like, man, I spent $20,000 and I didn't really do any deals. What do you think you learned on that? Like, what was your experience like versus all the gurus out there that I get constantly served on my Facebook ads?
Yeah, I mean, one, wholesaling makes sense for a specific type of person, specific type of seller, but it does not work for every person every time. And I think we see that where we have people now, instead of just straight wholesaling, saying, okay, well, we're going to do wholesaling into a creative finance deal or a sub-2 deal or a novation or other types of strategies. But those aren't the typical things that we see people talk about. The whole ARV, 70% ARV minus repairs, XYZ. We have sellers who have now gone through a period of hyper, rapid appreciation while also having very low interest rates, while also seeing a very tumultuous time in local economies. That changes how buyers and sellers behave. And so when it comes to wholesaling, I didn't succeed because, one, I didn't know how to analyze a deal properly. I didn't know how to engage with sellers appropriately. So I didn't always know what it is that I had. For example, there was a duplex that I had. I could have gotten under contract that came up like $30,000. And if I had, I probably would have made $60,000 on the assignment because it was such a hot market. But I didn't know how to analyze a deal properly. I didn't know how to think around what was the actual goal of the transaction and how to best serve the seller. So I didn't have the toolbox to make that appropriately. And I also had very little bandwidth and knowledge to handle things when they didn't go according to the plan. So when I got something under contract and the seller was super happy, it was a remote property. They were living out of state and the tenant was not paying their rent. It was a family member. There was a lot of emotions there. And they texted me on New Year's Day, after ghosting me for 3 months when they said, send me the contract. New Year's Day, they come back and say, will you still do the deal? Because clearly something had happened. They're like, I'm over this. I'm like, yes, I will. Even came up $5,000 for them, got it done, went and I got it assigned. It's going to make me $25,000. So it's going to pay me back for everything I'd spent. But then a few weeks before closing, I get a letter from them, from their lawyer, saying they won out. I didn't have the bandwidth to handle that situation. I didn't know what to do. My very first wholesale contract, now I'm getting threatened with legal action, likely because someone came along and offered them more money because I was going to get a really good deal. They were getting a good deal. I didn't know what I was doing. And so if it's a super traditional deal, a super traditional person, potentially that deal would have made sense. But as a newbie, in wholesaling, to be clear, wholesaling is marketed to newbies. They are not prepared to handle the complex deal analysis, the complex seller objections, and the seller situation that can require more creative strategies, and the potential fallouts of, say, they have to go to court or force someone through a contract on their very first time. I didn't have the budget for that. I didn't know how to do it. And when I look at more experienced wholesalers, sometimes I'll pull those statistics like, oh, had 10 properties under contract this month. 6 of them went to court, but we got to make it push through. That are all, those are all the different things that have to happen. And our reality is in the wholesaling business that I think get glossed over. And those are the types of things that newbies can get caught up in. And when I ask newbies, what do you really want out of real estate? Do you want a business or do you want properties that pay you? They typically want the properties that pay them. Okay, great. Then you don't want to be a flipper or a wholesaler primarily. That's not what you're telling me you want. So asking really specific questions of why are you here? And then looking at the things that you don't know is a really big indicator of whether people should be going into wholesaling, if they're going to be successful with it, or if they want to go to a different strategy.
Yeah, there's so much to it that I'm glad you dug into there, because there's marketing, there's sales, and then there's this whole transaction knowledge that I think you have to have. And I'll be pretty clear, like I've done a lot of deals in my life, but I'm not good on, if there's a title issue, trying to figure out how to get through that. If there's some sort of zoning issue that needs to be resolved, what are the steps to go get that resolved with the city and the county and things like that? And I was on the phone with a buddy the other day that like literally could just go for hours on how he would overcome some of those objections, where if you don't have somebody like that in your corner, it's tough when you first come upon it. And the internet's not going to tell you the answer, because all situations are different. And not only are all situations different, but every county and city is different as well.
Absolutely. And wholesaling, to me, it felt very independent. Like as far as the model of wholesaling, whereas, you know, one wholesaler next, I'm competing with every other wholesaler in this area. Every single person is a potential threat. Maybe they're going to come in, they're going to edge me up by $1,000 or $2,000. It didn't always feel like the community of support was there. Like if I go ask another wholesaler for support, they're going to ask me, what about that deal? And they might be trying to get around me or daisy chain it. And there's a lot of competition in that space when it comes to, it's kind of one-on-one for everyone. Now, as they transition into more team-based real estate, like multifamily syndication that I do now, I can come in, and because the nature of the deal is so large and so complex, I can come in and do the one thing that I do really, really well and leverage the skill sets of the other people around me. And I can tell people around me, hey, this is exactly the deal I'm doing. This is what I'm working on. This is how I'm doing it. I can get tips and advice and help, because I know this projects are so large. I'm not at risk of, you know, Jerry driving over to the property that I was just at from another appointment, putting him under contract for $2,000 more and I lose this deal. That's not how this works. So almost the complexity of the industry protects you from those types of situations.
What is your superpower?
My superpower is real estate market research and acquisitions.
Gotcha. So I'm guessing that's how you stumbled upon creating Bright Investor. So I guess at the high level, what is Bright Investor? And then we'll dig in from there.
Bright Investor is the way to answer what's the best market for me to invest in? What's the best area in that market? Okay, well, now what's the best deal in that area? Okay, now what are the rents in that area? What's the crime in that area? Okay, it takes you from, I know nothing about getting into real estate, to I'm confident in my decision to invest in this area to get the best results possible. We combine 20 to 25 different types of information, nationwide access, to give you the ultimate tool for market research. So you know without a doubt, this is how much the area is appreciating. Here's what the crime looks like. Here's even what build permits are like. So I know where everybody else is doing their renovations and their flips. So if I buy here, I can get added benefit and value to my property because I'm in the path of progress. And we do that on a nationwide scale. So it takes your research to invest in other markets and do out-of-state investing from hours and hours every week to minutes.
Yeah, I think that's it right there. Is everything you just mentioned, you can find on the internet and you can find in an open source database for free. So just to be clear, like this is a part of your business is organizing free data, not necessarily anything new, but I've gone through that process of, okay, I know that this is a market I'm interested in. I have no idea what areas of that market are good. So let me pop up in this tool. Okay, looks like this area is bad. This area is good from a crime perspective. But where are people moving? Wow, Here, where there's no crime, people are moving out of it and nobody's buying houses. There are no transaction volumes. So how am I going to get rid of this deal if I buy in that market? I love that you guys have put that all in one single place.
Yeah, exactly. And we're really excited because on January 25th of 2024, we're doing our Bright Investor 3.0 launch event. And we're announcing nationwide MLS access, off-market deals, wholesale deals, in-app mortgage calculators. So now not only can you find the best markets and the best areas in those markets, you can now do your deal sourcing directly in the same place as well. So you can go a whole A to Z in your process. And on top of that, we aggregate a whole lot of, you know, publicly available information like the US Census and Bureau of Labor Statistics. We also get data that's actually behind the private sector. So from specific companies like our build permit data, if an individual person wanted to get the 20 million different build permit data points that we have, it would cost an individual over $2,500 a month just to get access to that data from that company. And so when you look at the data that we have, a lot of it is publicly available and a lot of it also isn't. So when you look at all that information, it's about $5,000 a month in different data subscriptions that's put into one place and made really easy to see using our different maps and our layers, plus the new added MLS access. So now I can be looking for deals in the area that I know is the best area.
And when you say MLS access, so that is basically like these deals are on the MLS today?
Yeah, absolutely. It means you can say, show me a 2-4 family on market deal in this 1 mile radius that's vacant with high equity and an absentee owner. There's everything you need. Owner's information, mortgage information, transaction history, like you're pulling out the MLS and then you click a button and say, show me off market deals. Now you get to see everything that's off market in that area that meets your criteria. So literally you can do your deal prospecting directly from the app.
So that's amazing because you're hitting me at a good time. A couple hours ago, I was scrolling through YouTube and found a video like how to get MLS access. And I was like, oh, well, this is interesting. Let me go read this because if you're new to this space, you might not know, you don't just get MLS access. You have to use third-party access like Zillow and Realtor and things like that, which are great, but they're usually out of date by at least a couple hours, if not days, sometimes weeks. And the point of the video, though, was the way to get MLS access is get your realtor's license. And I'm was the biggest scam and waste of 7 minutes I have ever spent in my life.
Oh, that's insane. Like, that's crazy. I mean, that's what is such a difficult, really annoying part of the process. You know, not everyone needs to have a realtor's license. Sometimes having one can even be, antagonistic to your business by having a license,
right?
That's why platforms like Zillow or, you know, PropStreams come up where you need to be able to go and say, I need data. I need to get it now. I don't want to wait and take those tests to become a realtor myself. I just want the information. And so that's what we're trying to answer with that expansion if you find the best area, your obvious next question is what deals are available there. So let's just bring it to people. And that's why we have a lot of fun stuff coming on this next couple months.
So one of the things when I was looking at some of the demos that you have, and first of all, your website is awesome because in your pricing list feature, most people, when it's like, hey, you get this feature, you hover it over and it gives you a description of it. What I noticed about yours is you click on it and it takes you to a YouTube video of actually demonstrating that, which, by the way, is brilliant. So I just wanted to call that out. But one of the things I noticed was that you have franchise locations as well. So there's a common filter that some people use is like, hey, I want to be within 2 miles of a Starbucks because Starbucks isn't going into bad areas and bad neighborhoods. And so I'm just wondering, like, as you've built this out, as you've looked at deals across the country, as you continue to syndicate deals, what are some of those like unique filters that you look for when you're trying to find good markets?
Yeah, absolutely. We had some real estate investors and influencers in the space let us know that they use like, the Starbucks rule. And so we asked them, well, how useful is that in your investing? They're like, yeah, it's what we use every time. Like, great, let's add that to Bright Investor. And so we've been adding a ton of them. And the ones that I look at the most, because I typically look at B and C class multifamily properties. So the type of franchises that are correlated with the best areas, the best ranking schools, the highest incomes, and the more A to B class areas are Chick-fil-A's, Trader Joe's, Whole Foods, and Targets primarily. Those are the ones that we typically see in the higher end. And so when I go into an area and I say, show me all the local Chick-fil-A's, Trader Joe's, and Whole Foods, wherever I see that area, I know is the area that's also going to show me the highest income. It's also going to show me the area that's going to see probably the higher home prices. And if I'm looking to do a nice luxury flip or a higher end property, I know I need to be closer to those franchises as opposed to further away. And on the flip side of that, through the data analytics we've been able to see, we know that over time, a higher correlation of higher rates of crime, lower incomes, and potentially lower ranking schools are often correlated with franchises that are marketed towards lower income products like Dollar Generals and things of that nature. So the more types of franchises we see in those natures typically tend to be in our C class or lower income areas, where if I need to get a certain amount of rent in my property to make a cash flow, I know this area might not be the best one for me to put my strategy into because I'm not going to be able to push those rents as effectively.
Right. And by the way, again, you can go get all of that from Google Maps, but the fact that you have it in a platform and then be able to look at what's on market, what's off market, what is the loan balance, and couple that with population growth and income growth is just mm-hmm. phenomenal. And I want to kudos you on that. But are there any other filters that you like or that other people have asked for that you've introduced into the product set that are unique like that?
Yeah. So we do one called the days on market and price per square foot, which people really like. So we get a lot of flippers who come on, and especially right now with flippers doing days on market and price per square foot, when they're looking at doing their underwriting for a deal analysis and what they should be expecting based on actual properties that are being sold this very month, we track that on a month by month basis to show people this is what people are paying on a per square foot basis when they're done with the property. And looking at days on market to say, is this market getting hotter or colder? And we go back almost 10 years with that information. So we can see which times of year are the properties on the market the longest and the shortest. And normally that's summer and winter. But then every single month I can compare, is this market getting hotter than it normally is right now? Is it getting colder than it is? And if I go into a project, should I expect this to sit in the market a lot longer than it used to? And if so, how am I going to afford those carrying costs? So we see people really like those features in addition to their path of progress features. So those build permits, you know, like when you watch a hurricane or like on a Doppler system, it's like that red, green, like moving. That's what we do for build permits. So we show on a month by month basis, all of the different construction activity happening in a city, and then we show it moving. So you can literally see where people are moving to, where all the activity is happening. So when people ask us, how do you buy a property for 100 grand and it's going to be worth 500 grand in 15 years, that's how. I can actually see the wave of development happening. And as long as I buy right here, I know I'm going to get hit by that storm and my property value is going to go up. So it's quite literally predicting the future. And it's one of people's favorite features that we have on the platform.
You were like a former geo map scientist, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yes, I was a geospatial analyst for the Department of
there
Defense.
There it is, right. Geospatial. Because I can tell by looking at your the software, the demo of the software, like you have some forethought and some understanding of how to make maps look better and really conceptualize data that might be hard to understand if it was just a bunch of numbers and things like that. So when you were saying the red, green, and the hurricane thing, that made me think of that.
Absolutely. I mean, a lot of the information, one of the core tenets of BrightInvestor is that I want to get people results. My goal isn't for people to be spending hours doing research. I don't want you to be spending hours behind the computer. My goal is that very quickly and very easily, people can get the answers they need to make an offer on a building, to invest out of state with confidence, to set the right rents so that people are successful in real estate. And so my job is not just to build a platform that can give you information, but it's to create a platform that provides information in an easy, understandable way that anyone can come on and say, I was scared about real estate investing before, but now I feel confident enough to put an offer in. And we've had that. I've had people make offers on midterm rentals, short-term rentals, commercial multifamily buildings by going into BrightInvestor and getting the confidence to say, I know what's happening on the ground here, even though I live 1,000 miles away, nothing's going to stop me from taking action. That's amazing. Why we do it.
Amazing. Earlier in the show, you mentioned that you've shifted now to, you have this business, but also you're involved in multifamily syndications and putting together deals. You said that you guys focus on B and C class properties. I wonder if you could just give me a high level, like what are you all looking for and what is your strategy in the B and C class space?
Yeah, so what I'm looking for is apartments. Typically, we're looking in San Antonio, Texas, other secondary markets in San Antonio, Texas, or ever other secondary markets in Texas, places like Georgia and Tennessee and the Carolinas. And what we want to be able to do is come and buy a property that's typically in the 1980s or newer vintage. And we want to buy something that's 100 units or bigger and has a lot of two-bedroom apartments, because generally a two-bedroom apartment can accommodate a lot more types of people than just a one-bedroom apartment can. You know, you can have someone who works from home, roommates, you know, a couple, first child, a lot of different people. And so what we're looking to do is to come in and acquire these properties. The one that I'm getting right now was listed for $28 million. We're buying it for $20 million because this guy was in a situation where he really needed to sell. He tried to sell it twice and it had failed for a variety of different reasons. And so we're able to come in, really give him a solution to say, look, we can close on this. We know we have the capacity to do it. It's a mile away from our other property that we already own here. So this is just a win-win for everybody. So we were able to come in and look for deals like that, where, you know, people who haven't maybe bought too much property or put the wrong type of debt on it, maybe a floating rate mortgage and interest rates are starting to creep up and they needed to have someone come in and buy it. We look for opportunities where we can come in, get an attractive price for our investors with a value add plan of renovating the units and increasing the operational efficiency to make a creative win situation for everybody involved.
So you found that on the market though?
So that one came to us on the market. Yes.
Gotcha. And you mentioned some of the markets you're in. Texas obviously is growing tremendously, but I think I heard the Carolinas and Tennessee as well.
Correct. Yes.
Why do you operate in those four markets?
Yeah. So we have a couple of rules of thumb that we look for. So I like to see at least 10% population growth over the last 10 years. I like to see the same thing on job growth, 10% over the last 10 years. I'm looking for job growth in a few specific industries, things like healthcare, education, professional business services, even government as well, because you typically don't hear about governments, you know, going out of business or universities or hospitals or these types of large white collar industries that, you know, a lot of people are moving into. So I look for those areas and I think about not just what's going to be a good market a year from now, where are people still going to be wanting to live 10 years from now? Because if I can buy a property there, then I have the capacity to get in continued appreciation on it, despite all the renovations I do, because the area is so hot in demand. And so when we look for those factors, in addition to where the income's going up, where the demand is, where people are moving, you know, things like where is the prices most attractive for these buildings that we want to purchase, those markets consistently show us that's where the opportunity is. And right now, you know, full disclosure, right now we're seeing some people who bought large apartment complexes are in a little bit of trouble. No, I happen to know a group that purchased, they went from 14,000 units to 29,000 units in 12 months. And they put a lot of floating rate debt. I know, it's insane. And they put a lot of floating rate debt on that. And so now when interest rates change, they're in a situation where they bought way too quickly, they don't have the teams built out, and they need someone to come in and make those sell those properties to, so they can, you know, stay above water and, you know, make a successful plan. And so some of those markets that I mentioned that have that, a lot of growth, are also markets that attracted investors that maybe didn't have the best operations when they came in. And so we're able to come in and say, look, it's a win situation for you and it's a win situation for us. We can come in, give you the price that you need to move forward from this deal. We're still going to, you know, we're still going to come in and get a good deal for ourselves. We're saving you guys, but we can still get into a really good market and a really good deal when we look at all those factors together.
Are you buying out their like secondary shares, LP, GP interest, or are you just buying the entire property?
We buy the entire property. So we'll buy the whole property and then we'll typically complete it doing a syndication. So just raising of funds from, you know, a variety of people using accredited investors, and our team is the GPs, the general partners who operate the building. And then we raise money from those limited partners or LPs to complete the capital raise.
Gotcha. And then when you're looking at debt these days, how are you looking at debt? Are you locking everything in? Are you doing floating rate, knowing that the sentiment seems to be that interest rates will drop, or how are you guys looking at debt? Hey, fellow investors, before we dive into our next segment of the show, I wanted to take a quick moment to talk to you about a fantastic opportunity for you to invest with me. As you know, here at Ice Cream with Investors, I'm passionate about real estate investing and helping you navigate the exciting world of wealth creation through real estate. And that's why, for the first time, I'm thrilled to tell you about an opportunity for you to invest alongside of me. Over the past 3 years, I've been investing in multifamily, mobile home parks, car washes. I've even become the bank and lent out money to fellow real estate investors on a short-term basis. And now you can come join me. If you'd like to jump on a call and learn more about this opportunity, head to icecreamwithinvestors.com/invest and find a time for us to connect. And now back to the show.
By thunder, let lightning strike me if I ever do floating rate debt. it's not something that our team seriously considers. No, pretty much everything we do is fixed rate, or we love doing assumable loans. So when I can get a property that had a loan on it for 3.5% or 4%, that's what we're doing right now. Actually, our deal is a 4% loan. You know, we can come in and take over that existing loan, lot lower payments, and we really love doing those types of deals because interest rates. Yes, the Fed said they might cut them 3 times this next year. Really excited about that. I'll believe it when I see it. And I'm not going to make any plans based on that because I need to be conservative. And all the people whose money that I'm going to accept in this deal, they need to know that I'm doing everything in my possible to put forth a solid business plan. Because everyone that invests in a deal like this and everyone that invests in real estate, right? That's potentially college education savings. That's retirement savings. That's wedding savings for some people. It's completely up to me and our team to care about every dollar that people are giving us and to put it into a building that has the best opportunity to make sure that college education gets paid for, that retirement gets funded, that wedding goes off without a hitch by having solid business plans that don't rely on what ifs.
Yep. Yeah, it's just something I've been thinking a lot about, right? So we see a lot of floating rate debt out there today, and everybody now is looking back on that and saying, why did you do floating rate debt? Why didn't you just lock it in when it was 3.5%? And a lot of people don't know that is a 6 to 7 figure decision because ultimately you can't get as much LTV. You have to pay for that debt upfront, similar to buying points when you're buying a home. Yep. And it's not just a simple cut and dry. Why didn't you just buy a fixed rate and lock it in? In turn, you don't face any of those challenges if you don't have floating rate debt. So a lot of people right now are going through cap extensions, refinancing, they're underwater on their DCR ratios and things like that. So you don't face those problems with fixed debt. So if I come to you and say, hey, do you want a stable, less risky, lower return deal? Or would you rather have some risk and a higher return? The answer in foresight is less risk, but the answer at the time was higher return because we saw what was going on in the stock market and crypto and all that sort of stuff. So,
right. Hindsight's always 2020. And so when you look at 2020 and 2021, where interest rates were, how quickly all these companies were hiring, everyone was excited for what COVID's going to do for remote work and expansion, all these different components. The economy was like, hey, it's white hot right now. This makes sense. And on the other side of that, looking back, knowing what happens, you know, we start to see, okay, maybe that wasn't the best decision. You know, even on the residential side, right? If you look, compare US residential mortgages compared to like Japanese or New Zealand or Australian or other countries' mortgages, we are almost, I think, 70% or 80% fixed rate, where in other countries, it's almost completely flipped. They're like 70 or 80% fixed rate. Or sorry,
that's right.
70-80%, you know, a floating rate. Completely different. And we, as modern Americans, we went through 2008 and we all said, hey, maybe not. We don't want to do that. That sucks. We're going to try to turn this around. And I think other countries now are seeing some of those difficulties as well when they're having to raise those interest rates and people are starting to say, maybe we don't want to do floating rate all the time. But when everything's going great, floating rates make a lot of sense. It's only when we start seeing the other side of the coin, the other shoe drops, that the reliability and low risk of the fixed rates really show themselves. And that's why I think for the next couple of years, we're going to continue to see fixed rates be the absolute, you know, only way to go. Because that's just what people can stomach right now after the ups and downs of COVID and the pandemic.
Yep. You're a guy that's done a lot of different things, right? You obviously geospatial engineer. You started a company. You've got a software company. You do multifamily syndication. Very knowledgeable in the real estate space at a very young age. I mean, Talk to me about how you're kind of able to do all of this stuff, because I'm kind of jealous and envy you in a way.
Well, whenever I talk to people who are, you know, a little more experienced than I am, who have been doing this a bit longer than I am, the first thing I always respond with is, I'm only here because of you. And I say that because when I got started, what I did was I talked to 10 people who had 10 years of experience in the industry that I wanted to be in, which was real estate. And I just asked people like yourself, what did you do in real estate that went really well for you? The answer to them, what they told me was house hacking. I house hacked and I loved it. Okay, that's what I did. One of my first deals was a house hack. And then I'd also ask them, what did not go well for you? And I just write those things down. And so I had the amazing privilege of being able to talk to a bunch of different people who told me verbatim, here's what I would do differently. Here's what I wouldn't change. Here's my 10 or 20 years of experience boiled down to a 2-hour conversation. And when I just wrote all those things down and I started getting into real estate, I had hundreds of years of wisdom right in front of me without ever having to make my own single mistake yet. And so that is one of the reasons I was able to get started so quickly. And the second reason I was able to get to where I'm at now is asking, why not? Instead of why. And, you know, when you're younger and you're getting started with these things, you know, you're going from high school to maybe college potentially, and people tell you, go here, do this thing, here's the path. When you start thinking about alternative options and start wondering about what your real potential is, asking the question of, why not try real estate? Why not apply for that job? Why not start this company, even though I've never done that before? When you ask yourself, why not? And subconsciously, you're forcing yourself to fight that question as opposed to say, well, why should I? You're putting yourself on the other side of the fence, and it makes you much more likely to just give it a go. And I can look back on everything that I've done, from winning my scholarship to getting with the Department of Defense to starting my company to getting into real estate, was just a question of, why not try this and see where it goes? Worst case scenario, I stay where I'm at. Best case scenario, I'm somewhere I never dreamed I'd be.
Yeah, it's almost like why forces you to look at the problems and why not forces you to look at the opportunities.
That was perfect.
I know.
Absolutely.
I know when I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, everybody talks about it in this industry. But like when I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, one thing that really stood out to me was talk about this idea of not can I afford something, it's how can I afford something. Mm-hmm. So for example, if you need an extra $12,000, you need to sell a $100 product 10 times for 12 months straight. There's $12,000. All of a sudden you start thinking of these creative ways. And it didn't hit me at the time, but now looking back on it 10 years, I'm starting to figure out, okay, in my personal economy, I need to set aside money for 2 children to go to college. Well, how can I do that? How would I pay for that? Well, how about I buy these 2 houses? I'm only in it for the money down, and then somebody else is going to pay them off. When they turn 18, we'll sell the houses. I'll get my money back, and that will pay for their college fund. Like, as a perfect example of how to pay for something versus looking at the challenges.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is, the opportunities are out there, right? Every single person has these different opportunities that are out there. You know, anyone could say, I'm going to come buy this property. You're just the person who came up to it and said, I'm going to approach this problem in a different way. I'm going to pick up this tool of real estate to solve this problem of saving for college. So the way you approached it ended up becoming something that created more and more opportunity for you to capitalize on additional success.
Yeah. Or maybe my son will just be as smart as you and he can get a scholarship as well.
And that, in that case, you have a really nice vacation budget ready to go.
There you go. Hot. Give me some of that hot tub money.
There we go. Absolutely. Dad needs a jacuzzi. Come on.
Yeah. And I would just like to point out, I did not say cold plunge money. I said hot tub specifically.
There we go. Yeah.
Well, Donato, fantastic conversation. I want to be cognizant of your time, though, and switch us to our last round. We call this the 4 toppings. Our first one is, what is your favorite book, or what is a book you've read recently that's given you a paradigm shift?
So one of the books that I really credit to a massive shift for me was Who Not How by Dan Sullivan, which, a lot like Rich Dad Poor Dad, asks not how can I do this, but who could help me do it? And I'm a person who, you know, for better or for worse, will throw myself into a problem. And I think the longer and more effort I put myself into this issue, the more I've earned the result. And it took a lot of work to be able to say, you know, someone else, as much time that I've spent building Bright Investor, for example, someone else has spent the same amount of time learning how to do Facebook ads or learning how to do marketing. And like, well, I can just pay them this very small amount of money compared to how much it would have costed me to learn all that. And then they're doing it for me. And so that is a book that I highly recommend people read, because when you're getting started, you do a lot of things yourself and you have to, so you can be a good judge of character for knowing what needs to be delegated and how. But when you get to that point of bringing other people on, having the mindset of who can help me do this opens a lot more doors and a lot more fast success than just thinking you do it all by yourself.
Yeah, I love that. It's still something I'm learning, let me say that. But also one thing I've learned in the who, not how, is you want to find somebody that's going to teach you along the way. So it's not just, hey, this person is good at marketing. It's this person is good at these specific things with inside of marketing, so I could really understand how this engine works. Facebook ads being one of them. Just because somebody's good at marketing doesn't mean they're good at buying Facebook ads and running Facebook ads. Just so, because somebody's good at Facebook ads does not mean they're good at email campaigns. So when you're going through that who, not how, find that person that can teach you the things that are specialty and niche as well.
Absolutely. No, that's a great addition.
Our second one is, what is the best piece of advice you've ever received?
This is actually kind of recent. And when I was growing up, you know, before my entrepreneurial awakening, as you might call it, when I saw people post about like on LinkedIn or the social media platforms, just don't stop, don't give up, never give up. I kind of threw it away as, oh, okay, well, whatever. And everyone stopped. That's not realistic. But honestly, now that I'm here with our company and, you know, every day is a fight to get to where we are. You know, we're a young startup. We're trying to get better. We're trying to improve and grab our market and continue to grow and help people. It's those people who have been founders before. When I read those posts on LinkedIn and they say, I know how hard it is. I know what you're going through. Do not stop. Truthfully, that moment in the company of you've come so far and the horizon is just over there. And I know it's hard. And I know you're not getting all the sleep you need. And I know you're not prioritizing everything else in your life because you're prioritizing this. It is those moments when I read those pieces of advice of do not stop, keep going, that hit me in a way that they didn't hit me 5 years ago. Because now I understand what they mean. I understand being in that vice-like grip of uncertainty and choosing to believe that it's going to work out because you're taking the action to get there. You just have to have that ingredient of time. So
yep.
Best advice I could say I'm consuming right now and learning is do not stop. And that's different from keep doing what you're doing. I want to be very clear about that. That's a lot different than keep doing what you're doing. Don't stop means you're going to continue to put the effort forward and be cognizant of what changes you need to make along the way to adjust to your new path. It means you're listening and you're pivoting as you go. If you just keep doing what you're doing, you're going to keep the same results, which is same uncertainty. So when I say don't stop, be cognizant, keep your eyes up, listen, and keep moving forward, both in how you tackle the problem and the fact that you're tackling it every single day.
Love it. Love it. Nothing to add there. Our third one is, what are you most proud of in your life?
Oh, man. One of the things that I am the most proud of would probably be the fact that I've gotten to prove my grandpa wrong. He was a third generation entrepreneur. No, his grandpa started a welding supply company. He turned it over to his dad. He turned it over to my grandpa, and he ran it for, I want to say, 25, 30 years. And when I started getting into real estate and I started getting into the Department of Defense, I told him, hey, I'm going to start working for the DOD and I'm going to retire. Or I'm going to quit my job in like 3 years. I'm going to do or 5 years. I'm going to do it. I'm going to get there. And he was the first person to tell me, don't forget your day job. He was the first person to kind of just push me back into the traditional corner. And my grandpa's one of my favorite people. I smoke cigars with him. Him and I have amazing conversations. He's one of the people I do this for. He's part of my why. But it always kind of hit me like this person who had done business was the person who was pushing me away from it. And over the course of my first 6 months, next 6 months, and I'd tell him the progress that we're going through and the developments were happening, he'd say, that's great. Don't forget your day job. Keep your boss happy. And I go, man, can you stop saying that? And it kept going until eventually this last September, I got to leave my job. And I put in my 2 weeks at the Department of Defense and I was done. And I got to go to him and more, less of a sense of just look what I got to do. It's more, I stuck with it and I took what he was teaching me in between those moments of don't forget your day job and keeping those things the head of mind. Because when he was saying those things, he wasn't saying, I don't believe in what you can do. He was coming from it from a perspective of, I want to make sure you're safe and taken care of. And I'm looking out for you. I don't want you to get in harm's way. And so being able to come to him and say, I took your lessons and here's how I implemented them to get to where I'm at. And I'm going in this direction and you're here on my shoulder, even though I didn't listen to what the exact words were that you told me to do, and show him that I honored what he had to say and I respected what he had to say. That was a really cool moment for me just to be able to move forward like that. And still to this day, now when I get home, he's like, how's the business going? Let's talk about it. And he must engage. So that was really cool. You know, taking someone from where, what they said to what they meant and growing along the way.
Amazing. Amazing. Well, our fourth and final one is, if you could sit down and eat a bowl of ice cream with anyone, dead or alive, who would it be and why?
I mean, the first answer that comes to mind is George Michael, because I only got into Wham like the year after he died. And I feel like I could have had a cool conversation with him. I remember that was like first freshman year of college. And I was like, man, this guy's pretty good. Like, where is he? I'm like, he passed away. What? It's like a year before I went to college. And I'm like, this is pretty good stuff. And I'm sure my college roommates remember the daily going in the shower and all of a sudden, you know, it wake me up playing, they're listening to me listen to Wham in the shower. So I would love to have a music dinner with ice cream with George Michael, because I think he'd be a fun guy to have some ice cream with. I'm sure he has some cool stories.
I got to be honest, we've had some pretty weird and off the cuff answers. That might be the top one so far. I don't think I've ever heard something that out of left field.
I think it'd be fun. Every single time I sit down for dinner, I don't necessarily want to have a philosophical conversation. Sometimes I do. Sometimes I definitely do, but sometimes I just want to say, man, what was it like to be a international pop star in a band in the 80s? What was that like? Yeah. That'd be cool.
Amazing. 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 Well, Donato, fantastic conversation. I appreciate you coming on. If people wanted to reach out to you, learn more about you or Bright Investor, where is the best place we could point them?
Yeah. So you can check us out on Instagram at Bright Investor Official. Our website is brightinvestor.com. And if you want to check us out at the exclusive launch event for Bright Investor 3.0, we're announcing and showing features like MLS access and off-market deals. You can go to brightinvestor.com/launch and register for the event.
Amazing. We will link all those in the show notes. And then thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me. It's a great podcast.
Thank you for listening to Ice Cream with Investors. If you like what we serve you here, it would mean the world to me if you would like, subscribe, and leave a review on your favorite podcast app.